You're listening to TheBody.com's podcast coverage of AIDS 2008, the 17th International AIDS Conference. The conference took place in Mexico City from August 3rd through August 8th, 2008.
Hello, my name is Alice Ferrin from Plan West Africa. I'm a project manager for psychosocial support interventions for vulnerable children. And we have conducted a two-year study covering five countries in West Africa. And this were Sierra Leone, Liberia, Burkina Faso, Togo, and Cameroon. And in Togo, we are working in areas of high prevalence of child trafficking, where a lot of children are trafficked by intermediaries to Nigeria, to Benin, and exploited for house domestic labor or working in markets or restaurants. And for us, this work is really important because in West Africa, we are not reeling under an orphan crisis like some countries in East Africa. Our context is different. When we work with children affected by AIDS, we have to look at those that are more vulnerable to the disease because of their living situations. And during our work with trafficked girls in Togo, we found out that the incidence of rape among the girls is very, very high, and very often they're abused sexually at a very young age, starting at 9, 11, because they're leaving their houses by themselves with an intermediary and are handed over to their new mistresses. And very often they're sexually abused, raped by the sons of the mistress or the husband or other family relatives. Or often they work on market situations where they're really not protected and get abused by clients. And we also felt that it's very important to draw attention to this issue because in Togo, up to now, in the areas where we work, there's very little treatment coverage and there's absolutely no NGO supporting trafficked girls returning to their villages. And a lot of them are HIV positive or have other STI that make them vulnerable to HIV infection. And as they get abused at a very young age, we found out that also they're very likely to have a sexually modified behavior. So even when they get back to the village and they haven't been infected yet, they're very likely to get infected because they are likely to get engaged in transactional sex in order to continue surviving. So this is basically what we're trying, the message we're trying to put on. And our advocacy here is really to put away the focus from the orphans only, but to work with children that are exposed to a high HIV infection risk because of the living situation. And the trafficked girls in Togo are one of them. Other high-risk groups in West Africa are former girl child soldiers in Liberia and Sierra Leone, or war orphans, girl war orphans, because they have very little community support, or children that have come back from the war with kids that are not accepted by the community. The only way they can survive is through prostitution. So we feel that there are a lot of particular groups in West Africa that need more support, but we are still focusing or trying to focus on AIDS orphans, and we're completely missing the points.
So how many girls are we talking about here? Do we have any numbers? We know how many girls are trafficked in this area?
Well, it's very difficult because there is a law against child trafficking in Togo, and it's really taking place clandestinely. So we don't have numbers, and there have been studies and there are estimations, but they're not reliable at all. Or we know that in our project areas, we came across the problem because the children are disappearing out of school because they're being trafficked. This is how we came in touch with the problem. Very often, all of a sudden, out of a class of 30 children, there are 15 missing. So it is a huge issue, especially we have some villages that are kind of focal points for trafficking, but children are gathered before they are brought over the border. And although we don't have like numbers like 20,000 or 12,000, we know in terms of from our educational project that a significant number of children are disappearing during the school year and are never coming back or coming back severely harmed or not in a very good physical and emotional state.
Do they call it child trafficking there, or they just call it, you know, a norm, like little kids get employed in, as a housemaid? I mean, is there a part of the culture that just says, well, this is, they need the money, we need someone to wash the dishes? What's the problem?
Well, at community level, they wouldn't call it child trafficking. They know that we call it like that because there has been a dissemination of the law. But actually, what we see in Togo is a transition from a cultural tradition to a child abuse, to a catalyst for child abuse. Because what happened in former times, Togo is a very small and narrow country. So it is impossible to stay in the country and to survive. So people always travel to Nigeria, to Benin, and they have ethnic group affiliations to these countries. So in former times, children always traveled, but along with their ethnic groups and parents. So they were in a protected environment. And very often what is happening now that actually the intermediary is saying, listen, I know your parents in Nigeria, I'm going to bring the child there. They told me they have money to put her in school, so why can't we bring her to Nigeria? She can have a better education there. But all this is not true. The intermediary is bringing her to a mistress, and he is getting the money from the mistress. The child is not even paid directly. It's all getting in the pockets of the intermediary. So we feel that it's a really slow transition from a cultural tradition that has now become a catalyst for child abuse. And also Togo has a severe economic crisis, so the survival opportunities for families are very low. And if you have six children, for mothers, they have the choice either to sacrifice all or to sacrifice one child. And very often they pick the strongest to send this child away.
So what's the group you're with, and what are you guys trying to do for this group of girls?
Well, we have started, as I said, our attention came to this issue due to our educational projects, but we have seen that education does not keep children in Togo. It does not keep them in the country, because if you don't eat, education will not feed you. So they have to go, and we have even seen a lot of children want to be trafficked so they can earn money for their school fees and come back and pay them. So we have even children that show this pattern that they go 1 year to Nigeria, then 1 year to school, then another year to Nigeria. So it is kind of survival strategy for many children to have education. What we are trying to do is to raise economic alternatives for families, which is a long-term project, and it is very difficult. And we are also trying to set up a project now, as we are getting an idea about the magnitude of the issue, especially that we have now data on sexual abuse, on domestic violence, and on the number of girls that don't get reintegrated into their society once they return from their countries because they got pregnant, they bring back a bastard, how they call it, instead of the marriage gifts. So what we're trying to do is to offer psychosocial support. We had a pilot project offering and reintegrating psychosocial support to girls and boys returning from child trafficking, and that had been rejected from the community. So the project was offering individual psychosocial support to the children. And we also did a lot of collective work with the communities and sometimes cleansing rituals so these children would get reintegrated. And we had really amazing situations that when we wanted to accompany the youth for treatment to hospitals, that the taxi drivers would refuse to take them to the hospital because they're so stigmatized, because people know they have been raped and they've brought a bastard child home and this should not be happening. So communities really ostracized the children up to a way that they cannot access public health treatment because they cannot even take a taxi because the taxi drivers are refusing to take them on. So we have worked a lot with traditional leaders and other stakeholders in the communities to help us not to abandon these girls. Because very often in West Africa we are facing this problem that the communities take a decision for the best of the community and not for the individual.
Are there other groups working to help these girls, or are you one of the few groups in this area?
In that area, we are partnering local partners, but most organizations work in the capital. And in the rural areas where we work, there's very, very little coverage. They're just local NGOs. But I'm not aware of any international NGO at the present time providing support to these children.
Is there anything that anyone listening to this could do? Is there money that could be donated to help these girls, or anything that anyone could do?
Yeah, I think they could directly get in touch with Plan International has websites, and Plan Togo has a particular website for projects on child trafficking. This would be a great help, especially because we're trying to scale up. And we had only 30 children. And this was only those that we had covered in the research and that we found in such bad states that we could not close our eyes. But we know there are many, many others out there. And we really want to have constant mobile units being available for the children and to help them and to mediate in cases of domestic violence and to give them the psychosocial support they need to have a new start in their communities after the long experience of the trafficking.
How many of these girls, what percentage become HIV positive? Are you looking at that as well?
This is something, the problem is in Togo, in the areas where we work, there's no treatment available. So we cannot really encourage testing because it is very difficult for a person to know that you're positive and that there's no treatment available. So I think in our projects, we did not encourage testing unless the girls really wanted to know it. Because for us, it's also too difficult to accompany the process and not being able to help. In some cases, we did facilitate transport to the capital so treatment could be made available. But I think before we do large HIV testing, we need to make sure that we also have treatment available to help these girls. Or we know that since it's a cross-border area and there are a lot of migrating populations, it is an area of high prevalence for Togo.
Okay, so tell me about this picture.
Okay, the picture is one of the girls that we assisted after the research project because she was one of the most difficult cases that we met in the field. And she had been in Nigeria for working on a market, and she was staying there supervised by an intermediary in a house working on a market every day, and the intermediary would collect the money. And they were allowed to keep some small percentages. One night she got home from the market. She was kidnapped by a gang of young men, an older man. She said it was about 7, but she did not have a very clear memory of it. And what happened, they took her to a house and she was gang raped, but they also did some very bad satanical practices on her. So they introduced objects, candles and other things into her body.
But vaginally?
Yes. And also what they did, like they put a burning candle into the body, then they put their hand into her vagina, and she said they took something out of my body and burned it in front of my eyes. And indeed...
What is the source of this practice? Is this... Why would somebody do this?
Well, I mean, this is a question I cannot answer, but we know that these practices exist. And
but I mean, why was she particularly victimized? Meaning, was it something they thought that she was needed to do something, you know, satanic to her for some reason or something? Or was she just randomly picked?
Well, we assume that she was randomly picked, but she told us there were other people in the room with her who also had to undergo these practices, although they did different things to them. And she told me she had to watch how other people got peed on and other things. So there, it seemed to be kind of a ritual. They simply kidnap people and do very bad things to them.
And there were other women in the room with her that were...
Well, she said there was one more woman that was kidnapped and one young boy. And it was an extremely traumatizing experience for her. And what you see on the picture, it is like the biggest stone in her life. It was the most difficult experience ever that she had. And what was even worse for her, once they released her, they asked her, do you have money? And she didn't dare to say no. So she said, yes, I do have some money at my house. I said, okay, you have to give it to us, otherwise we have to do the procedure again. So she gave them all the money, including the money of all the other girls. So after this...
She went home with them?
Yes. And afterwards, she got very ill for a long time, so she couldn't work anymore. So the intermediary brought her back home and told her father that she stole all the money and that she has to pay it back. So this money, this girl got home to her community with a big debt. She had to pay back an amount of money that's about equivalent to $500, which is impossible for a girl in a rural setting to ever gain. And on the same time, she was still severely ear and head, having severe gynecological complications. So when we started working with her, we first got her medical treatment, and then we discovered also that the gang rape made her pregnant.
And so how many men had raped her?
7. And
how old was she when this happened?
When it happened, she was 16. So when she got back home, she was 4th month pregnant when we interviewed her, and when we started the intense work with her, she was already 7th month pregnant. So for this girl, before we could actually do the medical treatment, it took a long time for her to tell this. It's not something that you simply speak out about. I think it was a process of 6 weeks for us to get all this information, and especially what happened to her in that room, it came back in pieces. Her memory was very scattered, but she could talk about it finally. And although it was very hard for her to look back at these terrible experiences, it was important for us so we could facilitate medical treatment and also give her all the support she needed now to during the pregnancy. And another support that we provided to this girl is to help her with the financial problems, because The problem is that when we started working with her, she was basically only lying in bed all day, and people kept coming, pushing, putting pressure on the family that they need to pay the money back. And actually, 3 weeks before we interviewed her, she tried to commit suicide. So when we met her, she was lying on her bed, still having the aftermath from the agricultural chemical products that she tried to swallow to kill herself. So it was really one of the worst cases we had to work with. But out of the interviewed children we had in Togo, out of the interviewed girls, there were about 20% that were so severely affected that we really had to provide an immediate support intervention to them afterwards. And she was one of the cases that we worked with for a long time.
Is this kind of thing reported to the police, and does the police do anything about it?
The problem is that legal aid is something that we have tried to work with, but it's not something that really works in rural areas in West Africa. Because the problem is there's a traditional law system that is stronger than the modern law system. And if you bring such a case to court, it may take 4 years to get attention. And even after the 4 years, the judge might not be informed or sensitized about rape and sexual violence to women. He might say, oh, she got a baby, and now she's even pregnant again. Probably she wanted all this. So we have had a lot of cases where we tried to work with legal interventions, but we have not made any good experience with that. So what we rather try for these children is to build up a protective environment, to reintegrate them into their families, to make the families understand what these children need, and to give the support to the families that they can be of a significant assistance to the children.
The opinions expressed by hosts or interviewees in this podcast do not constitute professional advice, should not be considered substitutes for professional services, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of Body Health Resources Corporation or its sponsors. Please see the full disclaimer online at thebody.com. If you have comments or questions, please contact us.
Thanks for listening to thebody.com's podcast coverage of AIDS 2008. For much more coverage of this conference, including news, research, video, our photo journal, and, of course, more podcasts, visit us online at thebody.com/AIDS2008.